In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. And please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be speaking with Jesse Dayton. He's one of three well-known guitar slingers and Austin's Texas Headhunters. Their self-titled debut album features our recent coolest song in the world, Pocket. So let's give that a listen. And then afterwards, I'll be back with Jesse for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Steven's Underground Garage, and today I'm joined by Jesse Dayton, guitarist, songwriter, and producer from Austin, Texas, known for his guitar contributions to albums by country musicians including Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, also known for working with Rob Zombie writing music for his films. He's had a long solo career as well, but his band, the Texas Headhunters, bring him to our attention today. Their debut album, self-titled, and it features Jesse alongside a couple of other notable guitar slingers, Ian Moore and Johnny Muller. As the Headhunters, the Texas Headhunters, they have this week's coolest song of the world, Pocket. Now, how are you, Jesse?
Great, brother. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with me. So, you live in Austin.
Yes, I live in Austin. My family's an old Texas family, but I migrated from Beaumont to Austin back in the 1900s.
Wait, so you were born in Beaumont, right?
Born in Beaumont, two blocks away from Johnny Winter, whose parents went to, and two blocks away from George Jones.
Man, something in the water in Beaumont, huh?
There is. There actually is. You know, there's little pockets around America. You know, Texans like to think that we own it, but there are pockets in America around where there's really nothing else to do but try to be a musician or a, you know, baseball player. So Beaumont's one of those.
So I've read that artists like George Jones, Lefty Frizzell, early influences on you. So was there predominantly country music in your home growing up?
I mean, really, my mother was the big country music fan. My dad loved it too, but my dad had the rock and roll records too. So, and I think during his time as a kid, they were kind of referred to as race records, which were, which was, you know, Little Richard and all that stuff. But, you know, then when I came along, you know, that was kind of an outgrowth of both of those things. So, you know, we were, of course, Willie Nelson fans before the rest of the world knew about him. And you know, eventually I went on to play with, you know, Waylon and Willie and Johnny and Chris and all those guys. But, you know, when I was coming up, you know, besides listening to all the great stuff, you know, Yardbirds and Rolling Stones and Beatles and stuff like that, you know, this band The Clash came out and I went and saw Joe Ely opened up for The Clash and it changed my life.
So when did you start playing guitar?
I started playing guitar when I was 15. We had mandatory piano lessons for all the kids, all three of us and the family. So, and, you know, there was blues. My dad had all these rock and roll and blues records. You know, some of them were 78s. He gave them to me before he passed away. I still have them. But, you know, we had a lady who lived with us. People misconstrue that as we having money. We really didn't have, we were real working class, but we had a old African-American lady named Miss Victoria from Crowley, Louisiana, who lived with us. And she would go, "Oh, baby, today we're going to listen to some Clifton Chenier. And she, today we're going to listen to some Lightning Hopkins." And it was all people who literally grew up, you know, 20, 30 miles around my area. So.
Well, you mentioned your siblings. So now when this lady was playing records, how old were you at the time?
Well, I think I was a mistake, Manfred, because my brother and sister are quite older than me. So they were already off at University of Texas, you know, smoking the ganj and listening to, you know, Antone's guitar players, and they were gone. So I'm like a little, you know, 8 to 12 year old kid in this period where I'm home, my parents are working, and I'm at home with this elderly, you know, Creole woman who's teaching me how to, you know, make a roux for gumbo and listen to, you know, I don't know, whatever it was, you know, Clifton Chenier.
Man, where she was teaching you the life's greatest lessons.
She really did. And she was a beautiful woman. And she really became, in an unknowing way, became my marker for how I treat people and everything, who I vote for, you name it.
So my understanding is that you were in rockabilly bands. That was early on in your career, but
yeah.
What were you playing like? And were you playing in groups in high school, playing with other guys in high school? You started playing at 15. What were you doing?
Yeah, I was just playing guitar. I was like a hired gun. And the Texas-Louisiana border was a real fertile place because you could go and, you know, play. You could get a gig playing at a honky-tonk and, you know, do this little tic-tac Ray Price guitar stuff, or, you know, put your phaser pedal on and do your Waylon impression. And you could go in and make 100 or 150 bucks. And then I would go play with Rockin' Doopsie, you know, and play in Zydeco bands and play in little rock and roll bands that just did covers and stuff like that. So it taught me a lot about a lot of different styles and how to arrange songs. And it was very informative.
So it sounds like pretty early on you've made up your mind that you want to be doing music as a vocation. Was there some sort of tipping point? I mean, how did your folks feel about that? Did it make sense? Were they supportive?
Well, I remember I had this kind of crappy Honda motorcycle, and I rode all the way from Beaumont, which is an hour and 10 minutes, to Houston. And I went and begged this producer named UEP Moe, and UEP Moe, for the fans, the listeners, he produced Before the Last Teardrop Falls, and he produced Doug Somm, and he produced George Jones and Jerry Lee Lewis. And anyway, I begged him to let me play on this session. So I played on this Rockin' Doopsie session. I was the only white boy on it, and I got paid. And I took my parents out to dinner that weekend. I said, "Look, your boy's not going to the University of Austin, and I'm going to pay for this dinner, and I'm going to rent apartment." And they were like, "Hey, if you can afford it, go for it."
And how old were you at that point?
That was when I was 15. So I knew I wasn't going to sit under any more neon lights and bad lighting in school and
fluorescent tubes.
Huh? Yeah, fluorescent tubes, exactly. So, you know, I was always, you know, at that point I was, you know, getting into these bars underage, you know, playing these really sketchy biker bars like the Foxy Lady. And, you know, there'd be like 100 banditos in there. And, you know, if you didn't play a song off the second ZZ Top record, you might not make it out alive, you know.
You were hustling.
Yeah, man, I was just grinding, and I felt like a thief, you know. I felt like when the first time I got paid for playing guitar, I felt like I had, you know, kind of like, I can't believe someone's paying me for something I would do for free, you know?
Well, how did you wind up? I mean, so obviously you've got the hustle and the drive and the chutzpah to land like sessions and stuff. How did that tie into the whole sort of Waylon Jennings working with these bigger name guys? What got you into those circles?
Well, I was playing a very prestigious gig at the Continental Club in Houston. There were a lot of great guitar players, some of them a lot better than me at the time. And this was a real hot period of time in Austin. And this woman came in and she said, look, I'm a, you know, I can get you on TV, but I'll never get you on country radio because you're too weird. You got too much energy. And so I said, great. You know, she calls me the next morning. Hey, I got you on TV. You know, I drive the truck to Nashville, total cliche, everything but this piece of straw in my mouth, right? And I get there and I go on this TV show called Crook and Chase. It's a real square kind of, you know, thing. And the way I grew up around country music, it was always really cool. It was Waylon, Willie, Outlaw kind of stuff. And, you know, these are all like these really kind of silly neon Garth Brooks looking dudes. And I show up, I got grease in my hair and tattoos and sideburns, and I go up and do my song. And then the lady comes back and says, hey, do you want to meet Kris Kristofferson? He's going to be on the show tonight. I said, absolutely. So I meet Chris, and me and Chris go out in the back alley of this place and burn one and talk about Charles Bukowski books. And all so right. I have this huge night with Chris. I go to bed at like 3 a.m. I'm staying out of the bricks, you know, out in the middle of nowhere because I can't afford to stay where the country stars are. And phone rings the next morning. It's like, hey, Hoss, I saw you on TV last night with Chris. You want to come pick some guitar for me? And I said, who is this? And he said, Waylon Jennings.
Wow.
And that was how it started. So I went down to Woodland Studios before GPS, found it. Never been to Nashville in my life. Knocked on the door and Johnny Cash opened the door. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the beginning of my career as a guitar player. And, but you know, I got to do some other stuff too, where I played with X when Billy Zoom was.
Well, I've got that. I'm going to ask you about that. Before we get to that though, I want to hear something about this. Jesse Sings Kinky, right? This Salute to Kinky Friedman. Now, tell me about that. That's the album, but there's something about there was a play, Becoming Kinky, The World According to Kinky Friedman.
Yeah. I got that through Jeremy Tepper in Dallas. You know, our buddy Dallas, who's a great DJ there at XM Sirius. And Sirius XM. And there was this playwright from Tennessee who had become very successful in New York. He wrote this play called Always Patsy, and it was about Patsy Cline. And it was on Broadway, and it was at the Ryman, and it was playing in London, and it was huge. So he decided he's going to write this play called Becoming Kinky. So Jeremy Tepper and Dallas both call me, and they're like, hey, we told the guy about it. He's going to be in Texas. You should go audition. I was like, okay, whatever. I was working on horror movies right at that time with Rob Zombie. And I walk in there and there's about 50 guys in there with cowboy hats on and cigars in their mouth. And I walked in there and I was the only one who had a guitar. And they kind of bumped me up and I went in there and they said, do you want to do this? And I said, yeah, of course. So the play did really well. And I needed to put another record out. But I didn't have any material at the time. So I just told the Kinkster, Kinky Friedman, I said, hey, man, I'm going to do a bunch of your songs. Some of them, the lesser well-known songs, deep catalog. And you know, Kinky and I were great friends till the very end. And he was the funniest, wittiest human being that I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, very, very cool. And now you mentioned Billy Zoom. So earlier this year, X played on this, the maiden voyage of, Little Steven's Underground Garage cruise, and you filled in for Billy Zoom, right, on some tour a couple of years ago, about 2015-ish, around then?
Yeah, it was like 2015. I had gone out and done David Letterman with John Doe's solo band, and John called me and said, hey, are you sitting down? I said, yeah. He said, Billy's sick. We have a very big I think it was like 8-week tour booked, and can you do it? And I was like, absolutely. You know, I always dug that band, and we had a great time. I ended up hanging out with Exene every night, and it was great, you know, I've been, you know, involved in a lot of these, you know, rock, punk rock, you know, things. And I think it's because, you know, that stylism that comes from early rockabilly and blues and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was amazing.
All right. Well, we need to focus some here on the Texas Headhunters. You're in there as well with Ian Moore and Johnny Mueller. The former was a lead guitar player with Joe Ely, has had a solo career going on since the 90s. The latter, a member of the Fabulous Thunderbirds. How did you meet each of those respective guys? I mean, you mentioned this thing. What was it? You said something about seeing Joe Ely live. Was Ian Moore playing with him when that happened? Is that when you met him, or how did you meet him?
No, that was Jesse Guitar Taylor was playing with him then. But the way that we all found each other was through Clifford Antone. And for the fans that don't know, there's a very famous blues club in Austin called Antone's, Home of the Blues. And it's where Stevie Ray and Jimmy Vaughn and just Charlie Sexton, all these really great guitar players started out. And Clifford loved young guitar players. So Clifford found me in a dive bar in Beaumont when I was 15. He found Johnny Mueller in Denton, Texas, when he was 16. And he found Ian Moore when he was a little kid. In fact, Stevie Ray Vaughan gave Ian Moore his first guitar. So we're all connected to this guy, Clifford Antone, who kind of resurrected the blues, and he resurrected Muddy Waters' career, and, you know, a giant figure in that world. And, you know, he would tell us, hey, there's this other kid that I think he might be a little better. He would pit us against each other. And, my manager, who manages Samantha Fish and a bunch of other acts, said, hey, man, you should make a record with your friends. And I was like, okay. And so we went into Willie Nelson's studio, and we banged this record out in like 4 or 5 days, man, like with everybody in the room, very little overdubs. And that's the record you get.
All right. So they're like 12 tunes on there. They're all... Are they live tested at all, or?
Oh yeah, yeah. We just got done. We just played Chicago the other night, and it was sold out. And you know, it's a city, a market that means so much to us because we're nerds for American music. And we went out and played, you know, Pocket, and Maggie went back to Mineola, and we played every song on the record.
Well, Pocket, in fact, that's our coolest song in the world this week, opening track to your eponymous debut. My liner notes say that Ian wrote that one. Is that right?
Ian did write it, and he brought it in, and I was like, wow, it's got that kind of snotty Yardbirds kind of.
Yeah, it makes me think of that that Tobacco Road. Like,
yes.
Yeah,
it's got that kind of vibe to it, and... It was pretty magical recording it, because when you hear the breakdown, this microphone stand fell during the breakdown and it went, and we were like, oh my God, let's take that and just put it in every one of those happy accidents.
So now, do you know anything about, did he share with you what anything about like the song's inspiration or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Ian was writing a song about, you know, the term rock and roll was never initially about music. It was, you know, it was about sex. And, hey, baby, let's go up to my place and rock and roll. That's what they said pre-1954, you know, 55. So, you know, they're just old blues and rockabilly records, Rocket in My Pocket, you know, and I think he was just kind of vamping on that whole, I got a rocket in my pocket, you know, thing. And, yeah, it just felt, it's just kind of it's a below the waist song, isn't it? Huh? it's, you know, if you get my drift.
Yeah. Woo. So I don't have like a track listing with credits for the other songs. Did everybody contribute songs?
Everybody contributed songs. Yeah, we were really shocked because Johnny Mueller's been playing with the Fabulous Thunderbirds for a long time. And Johnny's kind of the heart and soul of that Austin Antones blues thing. And he showed up with some really great songs. And me and Ian, of course, have been writing songs. I wrote Everybody Loves You When You're Down for Johnny Mueller. And, but Johnny showed up with some really cool instrumentals that almost had this kind of early 70s Jeff Beck vibe to them.
Well, let me ask you about another cool one on there. You referenced it early. Maggie Went Back to Mineola. That's pretty driving. Whose tune is that?
That's my tune. Yeah, that was that's got more of the East Texas, early ZZ Top when they were recording in Tyler, Texas, and nobody knew who they were. It's got that kind of vibe to it. And, we kind of go all over the place on the record, but somehow it magically, has a theme that runs through it.
Well, talking about Maggie, was there any one lady inspired this tune or is it several stories?
Yeah, no, it was. It was. We used to go up and play this place in Dallas and called Trees. It was a very famous place. Everybody from Nirvana to all these punk bands played there. And we'd go up there and play these shows. And this one girl named Maggie would come out. And I remember she was just absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. But she opened her mouth and it sounded like a banjo came out. She was so East Texas, it was crazy. And we found out that she had she didn't come to the shows anymore because she went home and she'd been she went there to become something and ended up being a stripper. And it's kind of a Welcome to the Jungle story all over again, just the Texas version.
So where is Mineola?
Mineola is, it's more of a barbecue pit than a town, my friend. It's a little bitty town right out in the, they call it the Pine Curtain, out in East Texas. And it is, if you're out there, man, they got two kinds of music, country and blues.
Okay, that's funny that you said that, because when you said two kinds of music and the first word came out country, the second word I was expecting. But that is way cool that it's country and blues.
Yeah.
So you got a cut on there, Fool Don't Play With Fire, and the lyrics mention Caledonia and Short Fat Fanny, and pretty cool to hear them name dropped in there, name checked, to know that the ladies are still on the prowl. Whose tune is that?
That is the great Johnny Mueller. And that there's a lyric in that song that might be my favorite on the whole record. When he says, when I left Fort Worth, Texas, trying not to lose my grip, them Louisiana women sure love to see me trip. And I was like, man, it felt like something I'd heard before.
Yeah. Well, let's think about this. You mentioned playing recently in Chicago. I looked up on the website. I think the next gig is at the Bijou Theater in Knoxville, in Tennessee, on Thursday, October the 7th. Is there anything that you're doing before that?
Well, I'm actually at home right now working on this film project. And that's going to, this is going to give me a little time to do this. And then we meet up with my friend Samantha Fish and do these theaters.
Okay.
Me and Samantha put out a duets record together last year, and it got nominated for a Grammy, and we spent 17 months on the road. And, so we're going to go out and do some shows with our friends.
And when are those shows running?
Well, we start there, in Knoxville.
Okay. So is that yourself with her, and that's not with the Texas.
No, that's the Texas Headhunters. We're gonna be going on before Samantha.
Okay, so together, you guys are all touring together.
Yeah, we're touring together, and I tell people about Sam because she's real hot right now too. So be sure and get tickets because they'll definitely gonna sell out.
Excellent, and then so it runs through the fall, right? That Thursday, October the 7th, at the Bijou there in Knoxville. That's just the first A whole series of shows. Okay. Well, we're going to listen to another track from this from the self-titled debut album with the Texas Headhunters. It's called "Who Will Your Next Lover Be?" And man, that's outside of pocket. That's my favorite tune on there. Right? It's got this great Steve Cropper kind of sax vibe to it. So whose tune is this?
That was Ian. You know, Ian's kind of the resident soul singer in the Texas Headhunters, and Ian's very obsessed with late 60s, early 70s soul music. And that's kind of his go-to when we're all traveling around. And, you know, he'll put on those, those high records and those old early Memphis stuff. But, you know, it's got that kind of vibe to it, and he can sing it, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so have any of you guys ever met Steve Cropper or worked with him?
I met Steve Cropper. I never worked with him, but I met him and Reggie Young one time at a studio in Nashville. I was doing a session for I forgot who I was playing with. I think I was doing something with Billy Swan. Remember that guy? I Can Help. And yeah, great song. And they were over there, and they came over and said, "Hey, man, like, what year's that Princeton?" I was like, "It's late 60s. And they were kind of, then they just both proceeded to tell me all these hit records they used my same amp on. And it was kind of mind boggling.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, you got to get, if I don't know if Proper does anymore, still works as a producer or not, but, you guys got to work with him, you know?
I would love to. I mean, are you kidding? I mean, you know, and the simplicity of his guitar playing and those little double stops, you know, how he turned those things, those little guitar licks into big, it sound like horns. And you know, it's just pure genius, man.
Well, Jesse, thanks again for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Manfred, thank you, brother.
We're going to take a listen now to "Who Will Your Next Lover Be?" It's the Texas Headhunters off their self-titled debut album right here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Well, I gave you my heart, but you put it on a shelf. You only love yourself. Someday you're gonna wake up and you will finally see the love you say was missing is the love you had in me. So if it's really over, baby, who will your next lover be? I tried to speak your language, but you looked at me and smiled. Said you're a fool to think you know me, 'cause you hang around a while. But if I waited long enough, I thought you'd finally see the man you always wanted was the man you had in me. So if it's really
will your next lover be? That's the Texas Headhunters and Little Steven's Underground Garage off their eponymous debut album. That's a tune that would make Steve Cropper proud, I'd like to think. Well, I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Jesse Dayton for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Samus Amenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Eddie Angel, he is one of the founding guitarists in the long-running instrumental band Los Straitjackets, and their new album Somos Los Straitjackets is out now on Yep Rock Records. We'll find out all about it next time around when I'm joined by Eddie on your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.